This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
You know, I wish I was a bit less pessimistic about upcoming summers, but I see more of this probably coming in the future.
With record-setting wildfires blanketing large swaths of the western United States in smoke, we thought it appropriate to speak to someone who knows a thing or two about wildfire smoke. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak to the chief air quality meteorologist for the state of Colorado, Scott Landis, to learn more about the cause of these fires, their harmful effects, and what we can do to protect ourselves. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Scott Landis. Scott is the chief air quality meteorologist for the state of Colorado. Scott, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Great to be here.
Well, I wish we didn't have to have this conversation, but everybody in my neck of the woods here in San Francisco is following the smoke and the fires vigilantly, and it's affecting your region as well. Why don't you first explain what your mandate is as the chief air quality meteorologist for a state? How does that work within the framework of your organization?
Well, first and foremost, my job is to help protect public health of the residents of the state of Colorado. And we do that by looking at all pollutants that affect public health. That could be ozone, nitrogen dioxide, carbon monoxide. But when we're talking about wildfire smoke, we really focus on fine particulate matter, or what we call PM2.5.
So when you're getting your data, what do you rely on? Because I know that there's this big disparity between some of the monitors that are more expensive but less populous. Like, I know San Francisco, I think, has one monitor that's like a $250,000 air monitor system. But then we have these home monitor systems through like crowdsourced systems like Purple Air. And I think a lot of people in the Bay Area are finding that more useful because we have so many little microclimates. But what do you rely on mostly for your data?
So we look at all of those things. Obviously, like you said, there are air quality monitors that are regulatory monitors. They're very accurate. They're also very expensive. But a lot of times, at least for the PM2.5 monitors, they're located in the big cities because a lot of times we're trying to evaluate the anthropogenic pollution. And that does a good job, but we start to rely more on these low-cost sensors, the Purple Air monitors. They do a really good job. They're not, obviously not quite as accurate as some of the federal standard monitors, but they do give us an indication of what smoke levels are in areas where otherwise we wouldn't know. We kind of complement that monitor data by looking at satellite imagery. Smoke will show up on satellite imagery, and especially some of the new satellite imagery can show us a lot of things that we couldn't see before, including these heat signatures from the fires. We can detect those fires a lot earlier than we could previously. And then also does a much better job of seeing that smoke, and particularly in the mornings when a lot of times the smoke is trapped in some of our interior mountain valleys here in Colorado. Previously, we couldn't see that smoke. Now, with some of the new satellite imagery, we can.
How are California's wildfires affecting Colorado?
Yeah, not only California, but also wildfires across the Pacific Northwest, they have had a big influence on our air quality here in Colorado. Now, we have had a lot of local wildfires as well. We've issued a lot of advisories based on just those Colorado wildfires. But it has been more localized when it's just been Colorado wildfires. We issue advisories for a few counties here and there, especially those that are close to the fires. But what's really put us over the edge over the past month or so is when we get those upper level winds bringing smoke in from other states. So not only do you have the local wildfire smoke, you have all the smoke coming in from California, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. And that's when we've really had some of our widespread air quality problems over the past month or so.
And you're about to get a very odd unseasonable solution to some of the most recent smoke. Why don't you explain to our listeners what's happening today in Colorado?
Yeah, so we had an unusually strong cold front move into the state of Colorado Monday night into Tuesday. And, you know, a lot of the times we officially end the Colorado wildfire season, we get our first snows. And usually it doesn't occur this early in the month of September, but we've been fortunate enough. This cold front has really brought a blast of cold air. It's brought snow, especially some heavy snow to some of the higher mountain peaks. And that's really dropped off the local smoke here in Colorado. So we're really thankful for that storm system that has moved on through.
When you look at a map of the United States and you see the effect of these easterly winds blowing the smoke from the coast, that smoke will seemingly always dissipate by Denver. Once it gets east of Denver, it seems like the air gets better. Why is that?
So, yeah, a lot of the smoke, when it comes into Colorado, particularly when it comes in during the overnight hours, it'll settle into the valleys and particularly in the mountain valleys. And it just gets trapped there as we have what we call inversions. So basically what an inversion is you have cold air near the surface of the earth and warm air above it. And what that does is it traps everything that's near the surface of the earth right there, where you're going to breathe it in. And that includes wildfire smoke. So a lot of times our biggest issues are in the mountain valleys. That smoke gets trapped. Now, when you get east of Denver, you get out on the plains, it's flat, and you really start getting a different kind of wind regime. You don't get these periods where you just have stagnation and light winds. Almost every afternoon out in the plains, you get those winds picking up due to the flat terrain and other factors. And that's why we tend to have more issues with wildfire smoke in areas that are near or in the mountains.
So let's dive into the effect of smoke on people. So you're also in a very traditionally healthy area in terms of exercise. And I see a lot of people out there when the air quality index is over 100 here in San Francisco with our hills. I'll see somebody maybe with a mask on going for a run, or even with no mask on. Just they're not smelling it. It's not affecting them. They're not in a quote unquote sensitive group. And so they just kind of ignore it. What's the danger in that?
Yeah, that's one of our biggest challenges is communication to the public, to let them know that this is something that you really need to take seriously. Breathing in a lot of these fine particulates, it is not good for you whatsoever. These fine particulates, what we call PM2.5, they get into your respiratory system. The biggest issue, though, is you really have difficulty exhaling them. So they kind of get lodged into your respiratory system, makes it more difficult to breathe, and really can cause problems for folks who have respiratory ailments, COPD or asthma especially. On top of that, these fine particulates can work their way into your bloodstream. So that can cause issues as well with your heart. So one of the things we do when we have these really elevated levels of fine particulates from wildfire smoke is that we let people know that strenuous activities are definitely discouraged. We want people to be safe. And the best way to do that is to try to keep track of what the air quality is like in your area via your local health agency, folks who forecast air quality for your area, or through the EPA's website. You can find out what the smoke levels are in your area in real time. And if you don't have an air quality monitor in your area, you can use your senses. If you smell smoke, you can fairly safely assume that you're probably at smoke levels that are getting unhealthy, and use your eyes as well. If there's a landmark you know of that's 5 miles away and you can't see it anymore, then you know that the air quality is unhealthy.
Speaking of smoke, the types of smoke from these fires varies greatly, doesn't it?
Yeah, PM2.5 is going to vary depending on the fuel that's burning. If you're near a grass fire, normally the PM2.5 levels are not going to be quite as high. Those grass fires are going to burn very quickly, and the event's going to be over pretty rapidly. So, you know, grass fires normally not as big a public health concern unless you're talking about a huge grass fire. But then if you're talking about heavier fuels, and we're talking about some of the timber you're going to find in some of the mountains, that's going to release more PM2.5. That's going to give you more issues and longer lasting issues.
So what about when homes get burned and buildings with fiberglass and things like that? Can they be included in the PM2.5?
Yes. So obviously, if you're going to be burning man-made structures, there's going to be some more toxic elements included in that kind of smoke. That's something that our PM2.5 monitors are not going to directly be able to measure. That's one of those things where if you do realize that you're near a fire that's consuming structures, you'll want to be extra careful about that. What the PM2.5 monitors are going to show us are the levels of that fine particulate concentration. It's not going to speciate out exactly what's in that PM2.5. It's just going to let you know how high those levels are. The speciation is something that can be done more in retrospect to be able to look and see what the smoke consisted of. That's really difficult to try to find out in real time.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to the Chief Air Quality Meteorologist for the state of Colorado, Scott Landis. So, Scott, maybe you can give us an idea of how you've seen these fires evolve throughout your career. When did you start doing this?
So I started air quality forecasting in the early part of 2013, though I have been a professional meteorologist going back to the late 90s. Dating back to the late 90s, early 2000s, yes, we watched wildfires, but as I became more interested and became professionally an air quality meteorologist around the 2013 timeframe, began to really start looking at these fires closer. And the one thing I have noticed just in the past couple of years are that the fires are seemingly getting more widespread. They're getting more intense. We're seeing more smoke across the western U.S. And, I do believe that this relates to climate change. Long-term drought, higher than normal temperatures, lower relative humidity with the drier conditions. I think this is a trend we're going to continue to see. We fortunately have got some new technologies and tools to help us detect these wildfires earlier and to get the word out to folks. So that has been a positive over the past couple of years, but I think this is something that we are, going to be up against for quite some time to come and until we're able to hopefully, make some improvements to how we deal with climate change.
And I know you're focusing on Colorado, but if we can just look at the cycle that we're seeing in California right now, where we're getting less rainfall because of less vegetation and less vegetation because of more wildfires. Is California on a trajectory to move more towards its neighbor to the east in Nevada? Or we also hear that wildfires are a good thing for healthy forests. Where do you stand on this?
So it's difficult for me to say that California becomes the next Nevada. But that being said, I do think we can anticipate drier, hotter conditions all across the western U.S. and probably, across the globe. Wildfires, yes, they serve a purpose. They tend to rejuvenate the forests over time. That is something that a positive benefit from wildfires. But one of the bigger issues we see now are, more folks are moving into these wildland areas. We're starting to see more development, especially here in Colorado. People want to live in the mountains, but there's a risk that comes along with that. With an increase in wildfires now, more people moving into these areas, those benefits we see from wildfires for the environment, we have to worry more now about loss of property and also loss of life.
And Denver had some of the worst smog in the country. I think maybe the worst smog after, I think, was it the early 80s?
Yeah, well, oh, absolutely. Denver had major issues with carbon monoxide, fine particulates, ozone during the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s. There's still work to be done, and one of the biggest, problems is ozone. It's a very difficult problem to resolve. The ozone has been ticking down slightly over the past 5 to 10 years, but there's still, like I said, work to be done.
Another issue that we heard about in the 70s a lot was acid rain. And with this smoke, it kind of reminds me of this situation. If we blessedly got some rain in the Bay Area tomorrow, it doesn't look like that's happening, unfortunately, anytime soon. Would that rainfall be potentially dangerous?
That is a good question, and I'm not sure I'm the best person to answer it. Obviously, if you have a lot of smoke in the atmosphere and then rain falling through that smoke, it's probably not going to be the cleanest of water that hits the ground.
Fair enough. We're all kind of learning as we go and we see these events unfold. Like, I bet you didn't study how does snow affect wildfires, and now you're gonna see that for the first time of your career, I'm guessing, today, right? And a lot of those studies, hopefully the science community can learn something from this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the one thing that we do know is that snow is very effective at cleaning out the atmosphere and removing smoke. And that's one thing that we've seen here in Colorado with this cold front. The fine particulate concentrations dropped dramatically in a matter of hours once we started seeing some precipitation move on into the area. And on top of that, having that increased moisture at the fire itself is going to decrease those.
So, Scott, let's turn to what people can do to mitigate the effects of wildfire smoke when it comes to their day-to-day lives. What kind of tips do you have for people to stay safe?
Sure. So, first and foremost, when you're in these episodes of very high smoke concentrations, being inside is the best place to be with the windows closed. Now, fine particulates unfortunately have a really effective method of getting in. They're very tiny and they can work their way under doors, cracks in the windows. They will find their way into your home. There's no doubt about that. But you should be able to decrease your exposure by being inside. And then during periods when the smoke decreases, you'll want to open the windows up, air your house out, and then if you start seeing the smoke increase again, windows back down. Now, for those folks that are able to afford an air cleaning device, a portable air cleaning device, those are also effective as well. They're not going to be able to do your whole house. They will do one room. So what we recommend for folks who do have those devices is to find one room in your house and you make that your clean air room. And basically, you'll have that the air cleaner running continuously with a HEPA filter. Have that running continuously so that room is always has those low PM 2.5 levels, and make it a room that you're in often, be it a bedroom or some other room. And during periods of time when smoke is at its worst, you go to that room. You stay in that room until the smoke decreases, and then you can go to other parts of your home. But having that one devoted clean air room, we think is a really good idea, especially for those people who do suffer from heart or lung disease. And then while you do go outside, we ask you just to slow it down during these periods of high smoke. If you can put off that bike ride or strenuous run during these periods of smoke, it's really in your best interest.
Yeah, so you're probably not getting healthier by running up hills with bad air, even with one of those masks. Those masks are not designed to run marathons with during
No.
smoke. They're just for industrial work and to just to be able to breathe, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately, the masks that we are using for COVID-19 are not effective against wildfire smoke, unfortunately. We still encourage people to use those for obvious reasons, but they're not going to help you with wildfire smoke. The only mask that's really going to help you with wildfire smoke is an N95 respirator, and those are really in short supply right now because of the pandemic.
Right, and that was my next question. I mean, could we have had a worse year for record wildfires with this pandemic that just happens to really prey on respiratory weaknesses?
Yeah, it horrible timing, Alex. It really complicates the message that we try to get out to everybody. You know, a lot of times with people who may not be able to afford a portable air cleaner, we would ask those people, you know, if you're at home and there's lots of smoke, go to the mall or go to a supermarket, go somewhere where they have clean air being recirculated. And we really can't do that right now because of COVID-19. A lot of people, rightfully so, are afraid to be around a lot of other people. So it really complicates matters.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Scott Landis. He's the chief air quality meteorologist for the state of Colorado. So what do you do to monitor the air when you wake up in the morning? And maybe you can kind of walk us through how you get your personal info and then how you act accordingly in terms of if it's 50, does that still scare you, or does it have to be over 100, et cetera?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, I hop on my laptop first thing in the morning, and we have an air quality PM2.5 monitor two blocks from my house. I'm fortunate enough to have that. So I will hop on. I'll go to our website, colorado.gov/air quality, and I'll look and see what that monitor is reading. And based on that, if I see PM2.5 concentrations in the 20s or lower, in general, I will have the windows open. I'll open the windows up. Once those numbers start creeping up into the 30s and beyond, then the windows do stay closed. And I think it really has to do with the fact of what kind of air have you been experiencing over the past couple of days. So those numbers will slide a little bit based on, you know, how bad it's been outside. You know, on top of that, you know, if I, as an air quality meteorologist, I want to know what's going on throughout the state as far as PM2.5 concentrations. So maybe a lot of folks don't have an air quality monitor two blocks from their home. There's a lot of other places you can get data as well. AirNow has a new website, fire.airnow.gov, which has an interactive map, and it places all of the regulatory monitors on a map, but it also puts all of those lower cost sensors, the purple airs, they put them on a map as well. So you can look and see what the closest monitor to you is saying or reading. And then, you know, on top of that, I will step outside. I'll take a look to the sky. I'll look for that kind of typical hazy, you know, the landscape and see what's going on. What do my eyes see? What was my nose smell? And that will also tell me what kind of behaviors would be a good idea and a bad idea for that day.
Jeez, you're scaring me. Just talking about if it's below 20, then you'll open the windows. I don't think we've had anything below 30 in 2 or 3 weeks here in San Francisco. Like right now in my neighborhood in San Francisco, it's the closest monitors to my house are reading 69 and 60. And that's good enough for me to be able to go on a walk with a mask with the dog at this point, because that's about as good as we get.
Yeah, I might have misspoke there. When I say in the 20s, I'm not talking about the air quality index. I'm looking at the hourly PM2.5 concentration. So I
I see,
apologize
I
if I
see.
confused you. Yes, if the AQI is 75 or lower, I think at that point it's okay to be getting the windows open.
Oh, I'm glad I clarified because
I'm glad
I
you
don't
did
think
too.
we'd ever open our windows again, or at least until fire season is over. And just for our listeners around the country, maybe you can give us a snapshot of how historic the wildfires have been here west of the Rockies.
Yeah, it's the worst that I've seen in my career as a meteorologist. I thought 2017 was a bad year. We had a lot of smoke here in Colorado, but this year has been the worst I've seen. We kind of saw it coming back in the spring. The drought was really intensifying across the western U.S., so the fuels were there. They were ready to go. It all took was just a couple of events, be it a lightning strike or be it somebody out camping and not putting out their fire. We knew the wildfires were coming. So unfortunately, this has been a terrible summer in the western U.S. for wildfires. And I wish I was a bit less pessimistic about upcoming summers, but I see more of this probably coming in the future.
Well, and then this thing that's really unnerving is that September and October are historically the worst months for fires, at least here in California. And we just got into September, and we've already passed the previous record for acreage burned. I think with 2 million acres, the previous high was like 1.96 million acres in 2018. So we're already in record territory, and the fire season technically hasn't really kicked in.
That's correct. There's parts of the Rockies, the snows come and wildfire season is over, but that's not the case when you're talking about parts of California when you start getting rid of those offshore winds that really fire things up. So it's something that the air quality folks in California and really throughout the western US just need to continue to do their good work and communicate to the public that this is a situation that's not going to go away anytime real soon. Looking at the atmospheric models just this morning, not seeing much relief in the way of any kind of precipitation moving in at least for another 7 to 10 days for California. So this is something that just going to unfortunately have to deal with in the near future.
Well, I know you're dealing with quite a lot, and I appreciate your time in this very hectic season for you. Scott Landis, Chief Air Quality Meteorologist for the state of Colorado, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Thank you, Alex. Good being here.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Mickey Hart, The Grateful Dead, and the Sanford Townsend Band.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.